So we are holding on Membeza Membeza.
David Burns News Boyama, in the following kind of things I suppose you might point out, you don't swear on them, even if it's way too
late. So even if it's 1-8. Avodim.
Slaves, bashkores, and documents, vakakores.
Except it's Derech Aga.
Well, yeah, if you do it by Joe Bush, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the swear on them by the time. And again, we're only talking about Shavuot
Laisa. There still might be a Shavuot Hesed on them. And in fact, by Hekdesh, in some places, the Gemara itself talks about that. In some cases, the Chachamim made a Takana that if you're going to be collecting from Hekdesh or
if you're going to be collecting from Hekdesh, you need to say, what we discussed at the end of Gemara yesterday, it might be Knunya. But there's also the idea that
when you're not worried about Knunya, there's a different issue, which is you don't want people to treat Hekdesh lightly.
So in some cases there are going to be, you were talking about wearing an armor, yeah, you were talking about Amidaraita level.
And that other dinim that don't apply to these.
So why we don't do on.
So we're going to see in the Gemara why. We're going to see in the Gemara why all these
four things are excluded. And besides that they're excluded from swearing, there are other dinim that apply to all these four things as well.
Ain ben tashlomei kefil, like tashlomei abava chamisha.
Tashlomei kefil sold it, tashlomei abava chamisha. If it was an animal and you shefted or sold it,
you don't pay the double. You don't pay the four or five for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara. Obviously, when we're talking about it, obviously abava chamisha only applies to animals. So of necessity, that doesn't apply to avodim shtaris and karkois. That one applies to animals of hekdesh only.
Also shenachinam in mishka. Also shenachinam for any of these things. Does not have to swear if he claims later on that he lost or stole it
or nanas or what have you. No, that's the case. That was the case where the Gemara talked about elsewhere that midrabanan and the shenachinam will have to swear in cases of hektish because they don't want people to treat hektish lightly. Midaraisa, he wouldn't have to swear. Noisa socho ain't a mishalim, and if he was a shomer socho, he wouldn't have to pay in cases where it was lost or stolen, cases where had it been a hediyot, he would have to pay, where it's hektish or where it's avodim or what have you, he doesn't have to pay. There is, by the way, there is actually a machlokas rishonim whether in the
case of the shenachinam and the shenachar, what about if they were pesheah? Are they still pocket from the shvuot hashem?
No.
Sorry, we didn't say whether the five to pay or not. We're talking about whether the five to swear or not.
Maybe you have to swear if they pesheah with intent.
No, so if they were pesheah, then the question would be, are they obligated, or if we're saying over here, shemachinam ein nishba, noise socha ein mishalom, so we're saying the shemachinam is not obligated to swear when he claims it was lost or stolen or what have you, what would be the din? What about the din if the other guy claims that you were pesheah with it? Would we make him swear then? Or maybe not.
If the
other guy claims he was pesheah, it doesn't necessarily make him
kosher. No, I understand. Okay. Claim not necessarily, right. But if we have evidence that he did.
If we have evidence, that's different. But even then, I don't know that would make him kosher on Shavuot necessarily. Whatever it is, okay, it's a machlokes, what happens if he's pesheah. Okay. Anyway, Reb Shimon says it's not so simple as far as hektish. Kodshim shechayev b'achriyusa nishbayin aleihen. When it comes to kodshim, where the owner, the one who was makdish it will be responsible to make up for it. For example, you have a case where a person made a neder that he's going to bring an olo or a shlomim, and then he designated a particular animal for that.
That's called achayus.
There's a difference we've talked about before between neder and nedava. Neder is a person says hare olai, that I am obligated. There's an obligation on me to bring a korban. Later on, he designates a particular animal to fulfill it. But what happens if that animal gets lost, stolen, develops a mum, etc.? Then he has to bring another one because the obligation still lies on him. That's kodshim shechayev b'achriyusan. He is responsible for the achrayus of it. He's responsible to make up for it. He has to make sure that the korban actually ends up getting brought. As opposed to nedavos, where he says harei zu, that to begin with, he says I'm designating this animal as a korban. Well, if that animal becomes unavailable for whatever reason, he's potter. The requirement.
What?
The other one was harei olah, that I am obligated to bring a korban. So kodshim shechayev b'achriyusan would be where he voluntarily said that he's going to bring a korban, which therefore he now is responsible to make up for it. So then nishbayin alein, Reb Shimon will say you will have to swear on those because Rashi says Reb Shimon holds as a concept that we learned earlier in our Masechta, davar hagorim l'mamon to mamon dami, that if you have something that in itself is not his mamon, it doesn't belong to him, it belongs to Hector at this point, but it indirectly brings to mamon. Because he's going to have to repay it. He's going to have to designate a new animal and bring it as a carbon. Reb Shimon holds that's considered like mammon.
The only one?
Well, we had a similar concept of Davar Gerim in the moment. We had an earlier perek about Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon, but that was a different Rav Shimon Elazar actually, but that was in a different context. That wasn't necessarily the same idea as that.
Wow.
But anyway, so Rav Shimon makes that distinction. V'she'en chai b'achrius and ein nishbar nalei. And if you're not chai b'achrius, where it was in a dava, you said harezu, or where it was a korban that you're not, where you said harezu, where you said this animal. So you're not responsible for achriyusan. You're not responsible to make good on it. And nishbarin alei, and you would not have to swear on it because then it's not considered his. Then there's no javar going the moment. Even there's nothing even that's going to cause an outlay of money. But that's it. So the animal
is harezu hekdesh.
If he said harezu hekdesh, that's it. If the animal gets lost, stolen, dies, what have you, then that's it. He has no further responsibility. Therefore, there's no moment involved. Hmm. Okay. Reb Meir says that. This that you're saying that you don't swear on karka is also not so simple.
Tanakama obviously.
The Tanakama disagrees with that, right? The halacha is like the Tanakama. Rav Meir says this that you're saying that by karka you don't swear. There's also it's not so simple. Yesh dvarim shehen b'karka kekarka ve'enin kekarka. There are cases, there are things that are in the ground or are attached to the ground, but yet they're not like the ground. Ve'en chachamim, and therefore you would have to swear on them. Ve'en chachamim modim lo, the chachamim do not agree with him. They say there's a distinction. The Einan Kekaka. Even though they're attached to the ground, they're still not considered like the ground. They're considered like metalkalim, and you would have to swear on them. The Ein Chachamim Modim Lo, but the Chachamim do not agree with it. Kesad, what's an example? They consider it like Karka. Kesad, what's an example? Suppose that one person says, Esav Gfanim Te'unes Masar Dilacha, I gave you over to watch for me 10 vines that were laden with fruit. So they're still attached to the ground. They have fruit on them. And the other person says, you only gave me to watch 5 of them. Well, is that a murder of mitzvah? Rav Meir Machayev Shavua. Rav Meir says he'll be Chayev Shavua for the 5 that he's denying. Because even though they're attached to the ground, they're not considered like part of the ground. Rav Meir will say that there is a distinction that in a case like this, you would, even though they're attached to the ground, you would consider as if they were already detached, as we'll see in the Gemara. We'll discuss the machlokas between them briefly. And then on top of that, Bli Neder, we'll also talk about a machlokas Rishonim and how to understand the machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. But anyway, the Chachamim say, we don't make any such distinctions. It's like the Karka, and you don't swear on Karka, and therefore you wouldn't swear on these 5 grapevines either.
Why is it like Karka?
Attached to the ground. We'll see in the Gemara. Another case, another statement. When it comes to swearing, even when it comes to metalkalin, it only applies. You only swear on something that has a measurement or weight or a number. In other words, not an indefinite amount. Kate said,
What does that mean? What do you mean definite or indefinite?
For example. Bias mole masar jilakha. Suppose that Reuven says, I gave you a full house full of stuff to watch. Vakis mole masar jilakha. Or he says, I gave you a full money bag.
But there's no
specific quantity. Right. Vahaloyma any adair, elamashi nasat and noito. The other one says, I don't know how much there was, but whatever you took, that's what you can take. Potter, then he would be potter from a shavua because there's no definite amount stated over here.
You have to be able to quantify it. On the other hand,
but if one of them says, if the first one says the house was full with stuff all the way up to the ziz, which is the Rashi defines it on the next Amud as the beams, the rafters of the second floor that stick out in the house below. You have in cabins or things like that, and in bungalows or whatever you often have, but the roof beams sometimes are visible from the ground floor. Those are called ziz.
Right.
And they sometimes use them for hanging things, whatever. So he says it was all the way up to the roof beams. And the other one says it was only up to the window. Chayev, then he would be chayev for a shvur because that's a more definitive amount. We'll see in the Gemara that there's a little more detail to that.
I have from what? I mean, he doesn't say what it was. It was gold. It was wheat.
No, well, we're talking about evidently that there's no argument what the stuff was. They all know that it was wheat. They all know that it was oranges or whatever. But yeah, okay, fine. So let's start off. The Gemara says, Tashlumi Kefil Manolam. Where do we know this concept that we said in the Mishnah that Tashlumi Kefil does not apply to the four things we mentioned in the Mishnah? Avodim, Shtoris, Hakoris, and Akdish. Like this, the Tanur Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk talks about Tashlumi Kefil, there's two contexts in which the Torah talks about it. One is a general case where a person steals something. Then you have a more specific case that it talks about a few psukim later by a shomer, where shomer chinam is where shomer chinam has been supposed to have been guarding something. Now they come to Beis Din, and he claims that it was stolen and therefore you should be butter, and he's made to take a shavua, and it turns out afterwards that he himself kept it, so he himself is a ganav and he has to pay the shlomo kefil. So the pasuk
introduces that concept like this. I'll call it out. The full
pocket
goes like this. You can see
it in Torah. I'll call for anything on which a person might have done wrong. I'll shur, I'll chamur, I'll say, I'll salma, whether it's an ox or a donkey or a sheep or clothing. I'll call aveda, or for any other lost object. That he said that he can definitively say this is it. Adar alakim yavid varshneim. Then they bring the case to me, etc. Okay. So we have a klal of krap as klal. Our kol drav pesha is a klal, because it means anything that he might be pesha in. Our shur al chamur al sev al salma krap, and he has four pratim in there. Our kol aveda chaz of a klal, the word our kol aveda, anything that might be lost, is another klal. Klal of krap as klal, yapadon elakein a krap. Therefore, ma prat mafurish. What do we see? What are the four pratim have in common? The shur, the chamur, the seh, and the salma. What's explicit about them? Dover amatalto, they're all movable things, but gufay mammon, and they have intrinsic value. I've called dover amatalto, but gufay mammon. The same thing. The concept of tashlumei kefil can only apply to things that have those two qualities, that they're dover amatalto and they're gufay mammon.
It's smaller than they're animals. They're all animals.
Salma is not an animal.
Salma is a
piece of clothing. Uh-huh. Therefore, yotzer karkor is chain metal, and therefore that excludes carrots. Yes. Yeah. So yotzu karkaris shein metalflin. So therefore, that excludes land because it's not movable. Yotzu avodim shuk shel karkaris. We exclude slaves because there's a hekesh between them and land. So therefore, for that, for many purposes in halacha, they're considered like land.
In any case, we don't have we had a Mishnah. We don't have them swear. The
yotzu. We're not talking about the eved swearing. We're talking about Reuven says to Shimon, "You have my eved." You're about the eved. You have my eved, and Shimon denies it or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yotzu shtoris, and we exclude shtoris, sha'af v'shein metalpilin, even though they're movable, ain't gufan mammon. They don't have intrinsic value, because their value is in what's written in them, not in the paper. So that's where we know that those three. What about hektish? Why is hektish excluded from tashlumei kefil? Because that same pasuk says re'ehu, ksim. The pasuk mentions the word re'ehu, the last word of the pasuk, yishalom shnayim re'ehu. He should pay double to his fellow man, implying not hektish. Re'ehu means a fellow yid, not hektish. So therefore, not hektish. Okay, v'loy tashlumei kefil, v'loy tashlumei abav hamisha. We said in the Mishnah, you don't pay tashlumei abav hamisha. Why not? You don't have any positive that explicitly excludes that. The reason is, my timer, tashlumei abav hamisha, amar rachmona, v'loy tashlumei shloshav abav. Because the Torah says that if a person steals a sheep or an ox and shechts it or sells it, he has to pay fourfold if it was a sheep, fivefold if it was an ox. But not threefold or fourfold. Now, we just established that when it comes to hektish, we just established you don't pay kefil because re'ehu. If you were to make him pay the rest of the tashlum abav hamisha to hektish, what would happen? He's not paying the kefil because that's excluded. He'd be paying the keren, and then he'd be paying. Let's break it down. In a regular case where Reuven steals from Shimon and then shechts it or whatever, if it was a sheep, he's paying the keren. Then he's paying kefil, the extra equivalent value, and then he's paying double as much. That's the extra payment for having shechted the sheep.
The chaymish.
No, not chaymish. That's a different thing. This is we're talking about the shlomo abav hamisha.
Right.
Again, let's break down. If the sheep was worth $100, let's say, what is he paying him? He's paying him $400. $100 for the actual value of the sheep, another $100 for kefil, and $200 more for the tashlomo abav, because the Torah says he has to pay fourfold. Now, what would happen with hektish? We excluded hektish from kefil,
right.
So therefore, what we would say, we would have to say, he would be paying hektish $100 for the value of the sheep, and then you're going to make him pay $200 more for the extra payment because he shechted the sheep, then he's only paying $300 altogether. You don't have a case in the Torah where he's supposed to be paying $300. It's $400 for a sheep or $500 for an ox. So therefore, once he's not paying kefil, then he can't be paying avav hamisha either, because then it's not going to be the numbers that the Torah said. Yeah. Okay. Then we said, shrei mechinam ein edish. five, whatever, dollars, slavium, Zimbabwean currency, whatever it is, however much the thing is worth. Yeah. Okay.
That's nothing.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Shem Echinam Einu Nishba. Then we said in the Mishnah that in all these cases, also for these four things that we mentioned in the Mishnah, a Shem Echinam doesn't swear on them, and a Shem Esachar doesn't have to pay if he's saying that it was lost or stolen or whatever. Menahani Mili, again, where do we know that from? And again, the Tanur Rabbanan, because you have a similar brisa. Again, when it comes to the dinim of Shem Echinam and Shem Esachar, again, you have a klal, a proper klal. When the pasuk says, ki yitin isha re'ehu, a person gives to his fellow yid.
Would you arrive at the same conclusion if you use Ribui Miyut?
No, if you did Ribui Miyut Ribui, we learned in an earlier part of the parak, the only thing we would exclude is shtaris, which have no intrinsic value at all.
Right.
But our law is not like that, though.
The halacha is that we
do klal of profit klal, and therefore we need to make a class of items which have these things in common. Okay, so again, by shem esachar, so shem echinam we already dealt with the pasuk that we quoted before, our call of our pesha, which had its klal of profit klal, that was in reference to a shem echinam. Now the next part the Torah talks about right after that in Parshas Mishpatim is the shem esachar. And it starts off saying, ki yitin isha re'ehu. Oh, actually, no, this is still talking about the Shem Echinam, rather. Still talking about the Shem Echinam. So the previous pasuk says, ki yitin isha re'ehu, a person gives to his fellow man, that's a klal, anything that he gives him. Kesef a kelim is a prat, money or kelim. Lishmer chaz of a klal, the word lishmer is another klal afterwards, because it means anything that he could guard. Klal a prat of klal, yap dana elakein a prat. Again, ma prat mafurish davar al matalt of a gufay mamon. What do the prat have in common? The kesef and the kalim, things that are movable and that have intrinsic value. I've called davar al matalt of a gufay mamon. Same thing. Anything else has to be something movable and have intrinsic value. Same thing. Yotzu karkaris shein metaltlin. That excludes land which is not movable. Yotzu avadim shuruk shel karkaris. It excludes slaves which are a hekish between them and karka. Yotzu shtoris shapri shem metaltlin and gufay mamon. Shtoris are excluded because they don't have intrinsic value. And Hekdesh is excluded because Re'ehu Ksiv, because the pasuk says, Ki Yitin Isha Re'ehu. So that is why, not only we said before that you don't pay Tashlomei Kefil, which is from the next pasuk, but also the Shem Echinam wouldn't have to swear if he's claiming that it was lost or stolen or what have you. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Noisa Sachar Einu Mishalem, we said by the same logic, Shem Sachar, if he's saying that it was stolen, for example, where ordinarily, if it was a head yet, he would have to pay, and if it was Metalpilin, then he would have to pay, but in these four cases, he doesn't. Menalon, where do we know that from? The Tanur Rabbanan. Again, we have a bray, so you have another klal, a prophet klal. By the Shem Esachar, ki yitin isha re'ehu klal, if the pasuk starts off by saying a man gives to his fellow man, that's a klal, anything that he gives him. Chamor asher re'seh prat, chamor asher re'seh prat, v'chabahem alishma chazer akalo, again, klal, a prophet klal, chula, so therefore we exclude the same three things as before. And again, hektish re'ehu ksiv, and again here it also says re'ehu, so therefore we exclude hektish.
Same conclusion.
I mean, it's slightly different, really, because over here in this last one, it only mentions animals. Chamor, asher, reseh. But still, it doesn't mean that we exclude anything but animals. Practically speaking, I mean, the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia how we know the first one is talking about a Shem Echinam and the second one is talking about a Shem Esachar. The Gemara learns it from Sukkim over there. But also, practically speaking, Mefarshim and Sukkim explain that usually the kind of things that we talked about in the first group, and then by the Shem Echinam, where we mentioned Kesef or Kalim, those are usually things that you would expect the guy to watch them for you for free. He doesn't have to put in any effort into it. He takes the kesef and kalim, he puts them in his vault, he buries them underground, whatever, and that's that. He doesn't have to do anything with them. As opposed to animals, usually you would only expect the guy has to take them in and out every day, spend time on them or whatever. Therefore, normally you would expect to pay. Yeah. But anyway, as far as the klal of profit klal, it's the same thing. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Meir Omer Yesh Dvarim Shein Kikauka V'Einan Kikauka. Rav Meir had said, you have things which in a way are like the ground, or they're attached to the ground, and yet they're not the ground. And he gave the example in the Mishnah where Reuven says, I gave you ten grapevines to watch that had fruit on them, and Shimon says, it was only five. Is he a motive mitzvah or not? Does he have to swear? So the mayor said yes, the Chachamim say no. So the question is, Miklal, that a mayor sova kol mechubal akarka ainu kakarka, are we implying then that a mayor holds as a general rule that anything attached to the ground is not considered like the ground? Well, in that case, adam mitzvah gibur ta'unis. In that case, why is the Mishnah presenting their machlokas only in the case of vines that have fruit on them? Mitzvah gibur strikas, the strikas. They could just as well be arguing about if the vines don't have fruit on them, where the mayor would say you still have to swear on the empty vines, and the chachamim would say not. So obviously that's not the crux of their machlokas. Ella Omer of Yosi Reb Chanina. So rather, since the Mishnah is only presenting the machlokas when it comes to fruit, it has to be the machlokas is different. The machlokas is if the grapes are about ready to be picked. So therefore, what's the machlokas? The Reb Meir Sava Kibsuris Namyan. Reb Meir therefore will hold that we consider as if they're already picked. So therefore, they're not attached to the ground anymore. The Rabbanon Savri Lo Kibsuris Namyan, whereas the Rabbanon hold they're not considered like they're picked yet. Now, Tosfos starts by pointing out that there are distinctions. There are cases, for example, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, there's no question. Everybody agrees they're still attached to the ground. If you were to pick those grapes on Shabbos, there's no question you'd be chayav. Even Reb Meir is going to agree to that.
That's in Mammon.
But there's also the Rambam writes that this that we're saying over here, that the Chachamim hold considered like karka, is only as far as the concept of Shavua. But as far as everything else that we said in the Mishnah, where we said that a Shema Sachar, for example, wouldn't have to pay if he claimed Gneva Vaved or whatever, that normally he'd have to pay, but because it's karka not, in that, the halacha would be like Reb Meir, that he would in fact have to pay. Which leads the Raivad to ask, since when do we pass him like Reb Meir? We pass him like Chachamim.
He would be obligated to pay
as if it was metalpa.
Because
so that's the question. So the Raivad says, what are you talking about? That seems to be only according to Reb Meir.
Right.
So the
how you have the Neva Aveda with Mechubah Karka?
If somebody went and stole the grape.
The second he steals it, comes metalpa.
But at the time, but he was a shomer on them while they were attached. Well, whatever. Okay, not Neva Aveda then. Whatever that there was, you know. Okay, whatever it is. Anyway,
so would be considered the machlokes.
Okay, so what's the vart therefore? The Rimi Gash says, and Rishonim point out that Rishonim and Achronim talk about that evidently the Rambam follows this shita, which is there's a logical reason to distinguish between a shomer and various other cases, because. When it comes, for example, between a shomer and buying them or whatever, where the dinim of buying the talpulin are different than the dinim of buying karka, because when it comes to a shomer, you're supposed to be watching them, you're not supposed to be harvesting them. So therefore, fine. As far as you're concerned, they're still attached to the ground. Mashenkin for other purposes in halacha, you bought them in order to harvest them. Therefore, they should be considered as if they're already harvested, and they should be considered the talpulin for that purpose. So the Rambam can be taking up that shita as well. So when it comes to a shomer and it comes to him swearing, for example, then we're saying in the Mishnah that he'd be potter because of karka. But when we're dealing with other areas in halacha, such as mekach or memker, such as the dinim of buying and selling. Or various other things, then we would make them like metalpulin, because as far as he's concerned, they should be metalpulin. He's going to be harvesting them. There's also some of the Rishonim, the Ritva, and some others talk about there may also be a difference. How close are they to being harvested? Are we talking about where, fine, they're ready, they could be harvested now, but if you leave them on the grapevines another week or two, then they'll become even better. They'll become sweeter or whatever. Then we could argue they're still more like karka, as opposed to if they're at the point already where they have nothing more to gain from being on the vines anymore, that's when we might say that they're...
Regardless of whether they're attached or not.
Right. So that's another way of understanding the distinction.
Now, give us a case of a shomer who, let's say, he has to do something with a wine.
Well, if he hired him as a shomer, where not only he's going to be watching them to make sure nobody steals from them,
right,
but also he's going to be harvesting them and picking the wine or whatever, that's not really a shomer. That's more an oris. We talked about those in Bava Metzia, where usually you would arrange with him to give him a certain percentage of it or whatever. That has a whole other dinim. But Here we're talking about where it's purely from the point of view of a shomer. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said that you only swear on cases involved on where the claim was something that has an amount or a weight or a size,
right.
Not something indefinite.
Right.
So we said that we gave in the Mishnah an example where Reuven says, I gave you a full house or a full money bag, and the other one says, I don't know how much there was in there. So then there's no Shavua. Versus where the one says, I gave you up until the ziz, up until the roof beams, up until the ceiling beams, and the other one says, only up to the window, then he would be chayim. So, Omer Abaya, lo shonu elado omelei bai sam. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, the first case, is considered indefinite, is where he just said, I gave you a house full of stuff.
Not this house.
Not this house. Omelei bai sam mole, but if he said this particular house full, you diatanos it, and that's a known amount, because we can measure the cubic footage of the house. Omelei Rava yihachi, so Rava says, but if that's the case, if that's how you're understanding the Mishnah, adatoni sefer, zeim adaziz, vzeim adachaloin, chayev. So why is the Mishnah in the Sefer mentioning a whole different case where one says up until the roof beams and the other one says up until the window, then he's chayev. Lifloy v'lisnibidida. If according to you there's a difference between saying a house and this house, then the Mishnah should be telling us that distinction.
Medvar mamur
mabayis
malay. This or this halam.
No, because the difference. Rava is arguing that if you're saying that you say by that you say bayis zem malay, then that's enough. Even if you didn't say up until where it's full,
so
why would the Mishnah instead tell us you have a case of bias versus you have a case of adaziz and adachaloin? The Mishnah should be giving us a more straightforward distinction between bias and bias zeh. As long as you say bias zeh, it should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
When do we say that he's potter if he just said a full house? But if he says this house full, then he should be chayev.
What is the question?
The question is why isn't the Mishnah making that distinction? The fact the Mishnah is not making that distinction shows that that's not a valid distinction. And the Ritva, I think it is, talks about that maybe the idea is, of course, we could measure, of course, in the case of bias there, like a bias saying we could measure the capacity of the house. But we might argue, Rava might be arguing at this point in the discussion anyway, that if it's something that's not immediately known to the Dayanim, then we can't consider it a definitive amount. If they have to actually go there and start measuring in order to find out the size of it, that might not be considered definitive enough.
But it is measurable.
It's measurable, but it's not something. But it's not something. It's not like if he tells him
it's not, it is measurable.
It's measurable, but it's not measured at this point. It's not something that Yonim would have to actually come down there and then watch the
measurement.
Well, one second. Ella Omar Rava. One second. So no, Rava says the distinction is not between bias there and bias. Lo'olam ein chayev. He will only be chayev ad sheet and never davar shem midav shem mishkal shem minyan. Only if he claims from him something that has a known, an established measurement or weight or number, the yodelay b'davar shem mishkal shem minyan, and that he's moded to him in an amount in something that has a definitive amount. Which means okay, hold on. So Tosfos makes a different distinction. The vort is like this: if you say a full house. Even if you say this house full, so we know the cubic footage of the house. The problem is, what's the definition of full?
Realistically, it doesn't mean full that every single cubic inch is filled. There's spaces here and there, or whatever. So therefore, it's not really definitive.
As opposed to if you say adaziz, if you say up until the beams or adachalon, up until the window, then you have something more definitive.
Was considered rubbish, so
it would only, that's the thing,
that's
what the
Mishnah is saying,
therefore, only if you pointed out a certain point up, and you only if you said up until a certain point in the house. It has to be bias there, definitely. Bias itself wouldn't be enough, because even if you said adaziz or adachaloin, because there's still no way of knowing, houses come in different sizes. But even with bias there, if you said bias there mole, it still wouldn't work. Because again, like Tosfos is saying, mole itself is not really that definite. But if you say adaziz, then that's a definitive amount. It's fine. So it would still mean that fine. We're gonna have to go and measure and see what the length and width and height of the house is. But at least we can do that, and then we can know. Okay, well then we know there's X number of cubic feet of grain or oranges or whatever that was supposed to be in here.
There's two floors.
No, when you say the Z, it means that's what Rashi pointed out. Kodesh of Aliyah,
it means the beams of the upper floor that are visible from the lower floor. So that's what it means. It means the whole ground floor.
So
the whole ground floor as opposed to the attic.
So it's a little more precise.
So that's the thing. It's a little more precise, right? One thing is also, Tosfos points out, we do have, and this is brought to Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara discussed in Bava Metzia, the whole concept of Moda Mitzvah doesn't apply if he says Halach. If he says, I have what I'm Moda on, I have right here. When do we say Moda Mitzvah? Is if Reuven says, you owe me 100, Shimon says, I only owe you 50, but I don't have it right now. I'll pay you the 50 some other time, but I don't have it right now. As opposed to if he says, I have 50 and Halach, here it is, then that wouldn't be considered motive mixer. The Gemara brings two different opinions about it in Bava Metzia, but the halacha is that Halach is not motive mixer.
What is it? It's paid?
It's considered that 50 is paid, and then he's only kofa hakel on another 50, which is not available right now. So midoraisa, there wouldn't be any shvura.
But so over here, if you can see that the house is full up to the geezer, up to the halacha,
shouldn't it be considered Halach? So the answer is, evidently, we must be talking about over here, whatever it was that they're arguing about no longer exists. So, for example, it was a house full of grain or oranges or what have you, but since then they've spoiled, and therefore that's it. They're not available anymore. Now we're arguing how much was it at the time he gave it to him. He says it was up to the ziz, and he says it was up to the chaloy. So that would be motive method.
And that's what we brought to about. Okay, Tanya conversation, Rava. We learn a bright that agrees with Rava's understanding of the thing.
When one says, kur tvur libyadcha, the one says, you owe me a kur of wheat, of grain, and the other says, I don't have anything of yours in my possession. Then he's potter. On the side of it, he brings an agos tiyunim, a different gear set that the other guy says, you only have a kidney, because then he's being mowed down a different thing than the other guy claims. Okay, whatever it is, either way he's potter. On the other hand, minorda gdola yeshli biyadcha, and another case, similar case, minorda gdola yeshli biyadcha, if the one says that you have in your possession that you owe me a big minorda, a big minorda, and the other one answers, en l'cha biyadi la minorda ktana, no, it's only a small minorda, also potter. And
it's the same minorda.
No, but that's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara suit. And similarly, a zoda gdola yeshli biyadcha, if the one says that you owe me a big belt, and the other one says, "Ein l'chabi yadei ala zera ktana." The other one says it's only a small belt. Also, potter.
Because again, in each of these cases, it's not hadam and not kaina. You're not admitting to the same thing, the same kind of thing as the other guy claims,
as we'll see in the Gemara soon. Aval amar lo kur tvur yesh lo yadcha. On the other hand, though, if the one says, you owe me a kur of wheat, of grain, the other one says, I only owe you a lesech, then he's chayim, because that's real mode of mitzvah. Similarly, minorda bas etzer...
Right, for
the kur. Minorda bas etzer litzrim yesh lo yadcha. Or if the one says that it's not just a big minorda, which is indefinite, big could be any size,
but he mentions the actual weight of it. He mentions the actual weight. It weighs 10 litrin, 10 pounds. And the other one counterclaims, I only owe you a menorah that weighs 5 pounds. Then chayim, because then there's a minyan. Klolei shel davar, the general rule. Wait, hold on. Klolei shel davar, the general rule, says the Braisa, he will never be chayim ashur. Unless the Tevea claims something that has a specific measure or weight or number, and the other one admits about a lesser amount, a lesser measurement or weight or number. So now that we have that Braisa, that's a Braisa. Yes. No, well, a claim and a counterclaim, a Taina and a Haida.
Right. Not at the time of the agreement.
No. We're talking about that Reuven said, I gave you X amount, and Shimon said, I lent you whatever, X amount, and Shimon, yeah. Now, we have to ask, that general rule at the end of the Braisa, what would it be coming to include? Lav lapsuri, bias zemole. It must come to include a case of where he says, this house full, and therefore that fits with what Rava was saying, that when he says, this house full, is not considered a definite amount. And so that would support what Rava is saying. That he's not chayav ashur, because if he says bayis zemole, that's not a definitive amount, and therefore when the other one says I don't know how much there was supposed to be in the house,
that's not considered moed mitzvah, because he said bayis zemole, and mole is not definitive.
That was Rava's point before, that he said that he has to mention a specific place up to where the house is considered full. The point is not what the house was full of. We're talking about they both agree that it was God. But to what degree? How mullah is mullah?
But if he says there were 3 cubic meters of gold,
the question is, Maishna Minota Dolo Minota Tana. In that case, then we have to ask like this. So what's the difference between what we're saying, a large
Minota versus a small Minota? We're
saying he's potter because Mashatane le Hodolo, Mashahodolo le Tano, because the Taina is not the same as the Hodar. The Taina was one object and the Hodar was on a completely different object because large and small Minotas are two completely different things. In that case, you should say the same thing as far as the Minota that weighs 10 pounds versus the Minota that weighs 5 pounds. Same thing. It's the same thing. He's claiming a larger Minota. He's counterclaiming a smaller Minota. It's also different things. It's like wheat and barley. Why should it be a difference? Right. Which Rabbi Akiva Eger asked the question. Well, Rabbi Akiva Eger actually asked the question that why is the Gemara asking the question that way? When it comes to Minota Gdola versus Minota Ktana, definitely Gdola and Ktana are indefinite statements. Big could be, we don't know how big, small, we don't know how small. So it's not really definitive. Never mind the question of Hajar is not Mimina Taina. It's indefinite, and for that reason alone, it should be Potter. Okay, but anyway, the point of the question is, the main point of the Gemara's question is that why, when Reuven says you owe me a menorah that weighs 10 pounds, and the other one says it's only a menorah that's 5 pounds, why should that be considered Modiv Mikta? If they're two different menorahs. Why should it be considered Modiv Mikta? Yeah. When it comes to, again, it has to be that we established before, it can't be that he claims wheat and the other one says barley.
Right.
So therefore, by the same logic, it can't be that you're saying this is a menorah that weighs 10 pounds, and I'm saying I'm owing you a menorah that weighs 5 pounds. Those are two different types of menorahs. So, Amr of Shmuel Bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Hacha b'menorah shalchuyas askinan. Fine, but the case we're talking about over here in the Braisa is a menorah that's made out of pieces. So therefore, it's made, so to speak, like out of Lego or whatever. So you could build it smaller, you could build it larger, you could put in more pieces, you could put in fewer pieces, yeah. The commodulamine. Well, therefore, when he says that I owe you a menorah of 5 pounds, what he means is that I owe you enough pieces to be able to assemble together a menorah of 5 pounds. You're claiming that I owe you more pieces, that should be enough to assemble a menorah of 10 pounds, but I don't agree to that. Well, that's Modiv Mikta. Okay, well then the question is
the only way to explain it.
Well, wait. The question is Yehochia Zoda Nami. Then in that case, why is the Braisa just saying that when it comes to, why did the Braisa not make a similar distinction as far as a belt? It just said a big belt versus a small belt. A Zoda Nami Nisni. The Braisa could have just as well mentioned a similar distinction when it comes to a belt. I gave you a belt that's worth 10, I gave you a belt that was 10 amas long, and the other one says it's only 5 amas long. The loik may be the lifey, and then we could understand that the case is talking about, we're talking about a belt that's sewn together of many different pieces. So therefore, same thing. Lifey means that they're sewn together. Ella, the lifey like a sonny. You have to answer that we're not doing that, because when it talks about belt, we're not talking about a case like that. The Braita is not addressing a case like that, where the belt could conceivably be made longer or shorter by adding or removing pieces. The same thing. Why should we assume the case of the Minotas is talking about Minotas that are assembled out of pieces? Elam, Rabbi Mamem, also no. Rabbi Mamem says, never mind that explanation. Here's a different explanation.
Modular Minota.
Yes, but never mind that. It's not a modular Minota. I mean, the din would indeed apply to a modular Minota, but that is not what the Braisa is talking about. What the Braisa is talking about, the distinction the Braisa is making, is shiny Minota. It's different by a Minota, where he says it weighs 10 pounds and the other one says it weighs 5 pounds. Because a large Minota that weighs 10 pounds, you could file it down. You could use a metal file on it and file off enough metal that eventually it becomes the same Minota, but it weighs less. So therefore, you can consider that his hodah is mimina taina, because the smaller menorah can be made out of a larger one, as opposed to, Rashi says, that doesn't apply to a belt, because a belt, you have the ends of it are different than the middle of the belt. If you cut it in half like that to make it a smaller belt, it's not going to be functional as a belt.
If it's a one-piece belt,
yeah, that's a one-piece belt. In other words, So the din, in other words, we have two cases. We have two cases where the din would apply. One where it's a modular menorah. The other, even if it's not a modular menorah, because it could be filed down and made into a smaller menorah.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but it could be done. It could be done. You know, I mean, you wouldn't do it with the stainless steel menorah that they sell nowadays. You know, you do it with a gold or silver menorah or whatever, whether they're the 5 pounds of metal that you'd file off, it would be worth something. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's it. So those are the two cases. One where the menorah is modular, and the other one where, because you could file it smaller, as opposed to by a belt, you don't really have that. You can make it smaller, and therefore the only case the Braisa is talking about, therefore the Braisa doesn't make any distinction with belt. He says that it was a large belt, and the other one says it was a small belt. Nothing doing. It's Hedosh Shalom
Minatayim. So if it was a chain,
then if it was a chain, then that would be different.
It would
yeah.
be like
yeah.
the menorah.
Indeed.
You could,
yeah, of course. All right.
When somebody owes money and they have a mashkin, give them a mashkin at the time of the
loan. Later on, now the malva effectively is a shomer over that mashkin.
He becomes
a shomer for it because he becomes a shomer
until he's repaid.
And then he returns it. Yeah.
What kind of shomer?
What kind of shomer? That's actually that we're going to discuss it. We're going to get into that. We're going to get to that a little bit in the Gemara. But if I remember correctly, it's actually a machlok that's Rishonim, whether he's considered a shomer chinam or a shomer safar. But we're going to get into it. No, a shomer safar means that that doesn't mean that he's getting paid for it. But it means, I mean, eventually he's going to get his loan paid back. Therefore, he's watching it now. He's
responsibility.
He has the responsibility of a shomer safar, maybe. Yeah. So, but over the mashkin, and now the mashkin got lost. So now, again, if he's a shomer safar, then he should be liable to pay. Or even if he's a shomer chinam, he should have to swear. Well, omaloi sella hil v'sicha olav shekel hayishava. So now, the malva claims, I lent you a sella. This mashkin was worth a shekel, which is half a sella. Therefore, fine, a half of a loan. Therefore, that's it. I can't collect from you because I was supposed to keep your mashkin, and therefore that part's on me. But the other half, you still owe me. V'haloim, whereas the loiva claims loiki, it's not like that. Or a sella, he'll be signing all of a sella hayashava. You lent me a sella, and the mashkin was worth a sella. Therefore, it cancels each other out, and I don't owe you anything. Potter, then he's potter from a shvur because he's kofar hakol. On the other hand, sella will be sichal of a shekel hayashava. On the other hand, if the malva says again, I lent you a sella, it was worth a shekel. Again, a shekel being a half a sella. A sella is 4 dinarim. A shekel is 2 dinarim. So a sella is twice the value of a shekel. By the way, I mean when we in the Torah, when we talk about a shekel, usually most of the time in the Torah we usually talk about a shekel hakodesh,
which is
double a regular shekel. Oh. What the Torah calls shekel hakodesh is what they call the sella in the time of the Chachamim. It weighed a little bit more.
A stella
is more or less the equivalent of a shekel akodesh. Actually, they increased it by 20%. That's a different
in the time of the
Bais Rishon, I think, even, or at the beginning of the second Bais Hamikdash, I think it was, they increased it by 20%. But basically, a stella of the Mishnah and the Gemara is more or less the equivalent of a shekel akodesh from Tanakh. Okay. So now you have the second case where the malva says, I lent you a sella, the shekel hayashava, the mashkin was only worth a shekel, so you still owe me another shekel, another 2 dinarim. V'aloim aloiki, the other one says it wasn't like that. Or a sella will be signed all of a shlosha dinarim hayashava, the mashkin was worth 3 dinarim. So now he's chayav, a shvur, because he's a moed of mikdash. He admits the malva is saying you owe me a shekel, 2 dinarim. And the other one is saying, I only owe you 1 dinar. Because the mashkin was worth 3, you lost it, so that's 3 dinarim taken off of the loan, therefore I only owe you 1 dinar. Classic kofar, classic mode of mikvah.
Don't the exact half, it could be a little less than half.
No, that's obviously, we're giving those as examples. The point is that he's admitting something of what the other guy is claiming and denying part of it. Classic mode of mikvah, has to take a shavur. How about the other way around? Now you can have the other way around. You can have where the loiva is the claimant in Beis Din, because the loiva says sella v'sane all of a shtayim hayishava. You lent me a sella, but the mashkin was worth 2 sloim. So therefore, you not only the debt is canceled, but you malva owe me a sella. The malva says no. I lent you a sella, and the mashkin was worth only a sella. Potter, because again, he's kofar hakol. He's denying the whole debt. On the other hand, Stella will be son of a shtayim hayishava. But if the loiva says you lent me a seller, the mashkin was worth two, so you owe me a seller. The halayim aloki ala seller v'sichal of a chamisha dinarim hayishava. And the malva counterclaims that no, it was worth five dinarim. So you say it was worth eight dinarim, and therefore that I should owe you four dinarim. But the
I'm saying it was only worth five dinarim, so therefore I had
lent you a seller, the mashkin was worth five dinarim, so therefore I only owe you one dinar.
Five
dinarim is one seller plus one dinar.
It says it was worth
the loiva claims the mashkin the loiva claims that the mashkin was worth eight dinarim, two slides. The malva counterclaims and says it was only worth five dinarim. So therefore, I only owe you one dinar, not four, like you say. Chayev, and he's chayev to swear, because again, he's moed miktus. Umi nishva. Now, who should be the one to swear? How much it's worth? Mish, and we'll see in the Gemara which of the four cases this is referring to. Misha fikadin etzlai. The one who swears is the one who has a fikadin by him. Shema Yeshava, why? Shema Yeshava Zeva, Yeti Allah is a Pekadim. Because if we make the, which who has the Pekadim by him means the Malva. The Malva is the one who has to swear. Because the Loiva may swear, and then the Malva is going to pull out the Pekadim. And now what's the problem with that? The Rashi over here says, the problem with that is, what if the Loiva was not precise in how much it's worth? So now when we have the object in front of us, we're gonna figure out the value of it. We're gonna see the loiva claimed a different value, claimed a false value for it. Now he's gonna be possible ages because he's chashed on mom and he's gonna be possible for sure. We don't want to do that. We don't want to possible him unnecessarily.
That's the point. You know? So therefore, make the malva swear to it, and that way, even so, for example, let's say we're talking about in the Gemara,
the case that we're talking about over here, the statement of the Mishnah is referring to, we're going to say in the Gemara is referring to the second case of the Mishnah, where the second out of the four cases, where the malva claimed that the mashkin was worth exactly as much as the halvah, where he says that the mashkin was worth twice as much as the halvah. No, where the halvah, okay.
So the second case of the Mishnah was, he said the halvah, the loan was a seller.
The mashkin was only worth a shekel. Therefore, you still owe me two dinarim, another shekel. And the loiva is counterclaiming and says it was worth three dinarim. Three quarters of a seller, therefore I only owe you one dinar. If the loiva on that, but it's worth three dinarim, what's going to happen now if the malva pulls out this thing and we see that it's only worth two dinarim, then we're going to say, now this loiva is obviously a liar. Now he's possible Eidos, now he's possible Ashur. So that's how Rashi explains it.
What happens if the malva didn't...
Therefore we make the malva swear that it's worth two dinarim, a half a seller, and that's it. Now when he pulls it out, he's not going to pull it out and contradict himself.
If this guy's obviously a liar, he's a malva, because he didn't have it. But maybe...
No, all that means that it was lost at the time, but later on he found it.
Oh, okay, because right. I was thinking, you know, he just has filing it down. Maybe he filed it down, made it worth less than...
You have to realize that.
But you can't say definitely that he's lying.
Right.
Right, but okay, if we could be talking about the kind of mashkin.
Or you say he found something else.
No, because then the other guy would say that's not the mashkin. Then we would deal with that kind of thing. Anyway, Tosfos brings over here that the Gemara brings this discussion in Hamakid as well, because the Gemara starts off a discussion over there that when a shomer claims that the thing was lost or stolen or what have you, and therefore he says even though technically I could swear and I'd be potter, I'm willing to pay for it. And we talk about that he gets the kafel if it ever turns up, etc. We said Rav Huna, etc. There that nevertheless we make him swear that it's not birshusay because we don't want to have that he decides to keep him for himself In other words, you could have a case in Hamaskid. We talk about like this. You can have a case where a shomer chinam, let's say. So he's potter for almost everything except shia. So he or shlichus yad, whatever. So he says he comes and says the thing was stolen or the thing was lost or whatever. Technically, I should be able to swear in Beis Din and be potter. However, me being a nice guy, I'll instead pay you for it. So we said that if it was in fact stolen and the guy never was ever caught, then he's going to pay the tashlumei kefil to the shomer, who laid out the money for it. So Rav Huna says in the Gemara over there, actually, we do make the Shomer swear that he that it's not Birshusa, that he doesn't in fact have it in his possession, because otherwise he may rationalize to himself, you know what, this is a nice thing, I'd like to have it for myself, and I'm not a gan of myself, I'll pay him the full value of it, but then I'll keep it for myself. And then the Gemara brings in that connection, this Mishnah over here. So, over there in that Gemara, Rabbi Hanano mentions the same explanation as Rashi, the same explanation as he says over here, but he asks, so what? And if the loiver said the wrong value for it, knowing that that's false, are we trying to cover up for him? Are we trying to make that we're not going to get him, that we're not going to get him made posel la'edus on the shavur? Why should we do that? No, rather, the Rabbi Hananel explains over there, and some other Rishonim also, the Reef and others explain the same way, that what it means, when we say Shema Yotzi Allah Safikadun, the problem is we don't want to have that in the end it's going to turn out the loiver swore for nothing. Because like this, why is the loiver swearing? Because he claimed it was worth three dinarim, and therefore he's a motive mixed us, and we're making him swear. But if now the other guy brings out the pekodin, and it turns out that the malva was right all along, and it was only worth two dinarim, then there was no reason for a shavur in the first place. Therefore, it comes out there was a shavur that was made for no reason, and we want to try to avoid that.
But he saw the loiver thought it was a course.
The loiver claimed that it was worth three, but he should have known better. No, he should have known better. The difference between two and three dinarim is a large enough difference that you're not going to have it's not the chadei shadat toy. It's not a reason. It's not a reasonable margin of error. Yeah.
But why are we more afraid the malva is going to do a false shavur?
It's not. No. So therefore, that's what we're saying. The malva now therefore has to swear that way. Once he swore that's worth X amount, he's not going to later pull it out and base it in and contradict himself. So therefore, that's it. And then
if he doesn't put any that in Beis Din and made it wrong, sure, false sure.
No, but
it's a false sure.
No,
he knows that it's worth less than what he said it is.
No, well, on the contrary, the Malva is claiming that it's worth less. The Loiva is claiming that it's worth more. That's the thing. What we do, in other words, in this case, and again, the Gemara is going to say that we're referring to the second case of our Mishnah. So again, the Malva claims they both agree the Halva was a seller, four dinars. The Malva is saying that the Mashkin, which I lost, was worth two dinars. The loiver says it was worth three. So now what we do is, what we're saying, we make the malva swear that it's in fact worth two, which means, therefore, there's still an outstanding debt of two dinarim, and then the loiver pays up the two dinarim, and that's that. Which we'll see in the Gemara. Actually, we'll see another explanation in the Mishnah. But let's get into the Gemara, and we'll see.
But it's still a loiver that's lying?
No, but the
malva to swear falsely.
No, we don't know that the loiver is lying. In fact, the Gemara there in Bava Metzia talks about the possibility that maybe the loiver has more reason to believe the malva than the other way around. The very fact that the Gemara says there in Bava Metzia in Hamaskir, the very fact that at the end of the Sogia there, the very fact that the malva is prosperous and is able to lend, as in a position to lend people money, that itself shows that he's more of an honest person.
And that's why we're making.
But that's it's not the only reason. But it means, in other words, well, no. The reason why we're making him swear is Shema Yotzi Allah to Pekodim, because we don't want the loiver to swear and the malva is going to contradict him by pulling out the Pekodim, the Mashkin. So therefore, that's the point. In other words, we make the malva swear, and that's it. Now we take what he swore as definitive, and that's that. Now he's never going to bring out the Mashkin again, because remember, he said it was lost all this time, and that's that.
Wanting to keep the malva.
That's why we make him swear. Well, that's what the Gemara discusses over there. That's why the Gemara brings us in over there in Bava Metzia, that we are making him swear, and yeah, that's what we're going to see. So we're going to see who's swearing what over here. Okay. Incidentally, an interesting question that a couple of the Achronim asked, why the Mishnah uses the word Pekodin at the end. We just said we were using the word Mashkin the whole time. Why all of a sudden are we switching to the word Pekodin?
Yeah.
So the Tosfos Yom Tov talks about, because the same thing would apply to a Pekodin. One of the other Achronim, I can't now remember who it was, I think it's a Rakiv Eger maybe, gives a different explanation, which is, suppose a person were to make a shavua that he's not going to ever accept a pekodin from anybody, then he's also not allowed to accept the mashkin. By the Mishnah using the word pekodin in place of mashkin means, because a mashkin is a form of pekodin, then it means it's included under his shavua.
Right.
Okay. Something more asked. Aheya, which of the cases in our Mishnah is this last statement that it said, mi nishba, zesh nisha pekodin etzlo, which of the four cases is that referring to? Ilema asefa, are you going to say it's referring to the fourth case, which is a direct continuation of? You don't need to say that the reason why the malva is swearing in that case is because he has a pekodin in his possession. But typically, the shvur gabi malva. There's reason enough just to say that he has to swear, the very fact that he has to swear anyway, because he's the motive mixer. Again, he's claiming the mashkin was worth five dinarim, where the other one claims it was worth eight dinarim, and therefore that you owe me four dinarim versus I only owe you one dinar. So of course he has to swear there. The Mishnah doesn't have to tell us that he has to swear because of this concern. Shema Yotzi Allah Tzadik Katan. He has to swear because he's a motive mikdash. No, but the Lover is not going to swear in a case where the Malveh is motive mikdash. So Amar Shmuel Areisha. So Shmuel says no. That statement to the Mishnah is referring to the Reisha. V'chein Omer Rabchiya Barav Areisha. V'chein Omer Rabyechen Areisha. And so said Rabchiya Barav. And so said Rabyechen. My Reisha. What do we mean the Reisha? It can't mean the very first case of the Mishnah because in that case there is no Shmuel. Everybody's potter. We said that the loiver is potter because he's a kofakol. It means sefer derasha. It means the second part of the first section of the Mishnah. Meaning the second case where we said sela havisicha of a shekel ayishava. The malva says I lent you a sela. The mashkin was worth a shekel. Therefore, you still owe me a shekel, 2 dinarim. V'haloim aloyki al a sela havisana of a 3 dinarim ayishava. The loiver counterclaims and says it was worth a sela, and you lent me and you lent me a sela, and the mashkin was worth 3 dinarim. Therefore, I only owe you 1 dinar. So we said chayev. Now we said he's chayev as a motive mixer. So he's saying I owe you a dinar when the other one says you owe me 2 dinarim. Now the shvur gabi loiver. Now, by rights, therefore, the shvua would be the responsibility of the loiver because he's the motive mikdash, so he should be the one having to swear. V'shaklur, Rabbanan miloiver, v'shed yura amalva. Now, what we're saying at the end of the Mishnah is, in this one case, the Rabbanan removed the shvua from the loiver and instead imposed it on the malva because Shema Yotzi Allah to
the cut.
The loiver claims that he only owes 1 dinar because the mashkin was worth 3. And the malva says the mashkin was worth only 2, therefore you owe me two dinarim. So ordinarily we would make the loiva swear. It would be a classic case of modim mixes, because he says you owe me 2, and he says I only owe you 1. But because in this case, the malva's not modi on anything. The malva is saying the malva is saying that half the debt paid off because the mashkin was worth but that's not really modi.
Why?
Because that's As a shomer, he's potter anyway. As a shomer chinam, he's potter. As a shomer, you know, as a shomer socher, whatever. Yes. Okay. Fine. No, we're talking about rather as a shomer socher. As a shomer socher, he would be liable to pay. But fine, the fact that he's liable to pay cancels out half the debt. Fine. That's not really considered a hijab.
It's not considered a...
No. Okay. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah is saying, that in this case, what we do is we take the shvur from the loiva and instead impose it on the malva in order to avoid the situation where the loiva is going to swear that it was worth 3 and then the malva pulls it out and it turns out that it's worth only 2. Where again, like Rashi said, and like the Ben Hananel said over there, said in our Gemara over here, the problem is that now we're going to say the loiva is a liar, and we're going to pass on him for ages and so forth. Or according to the Ben Hananel's explanation over there, and Tosfos is over here, that rather the problem is we want to avoid that there was a shvur was made from where it turns out there was no need for the shvur in the first place. Mahashta de Amar Rav Ashi. However, now that Rav Ashi in that sugya and hamaskid, Rav Ashi gives a different answer over there. Because that's the thing. Why is the Gemara bringing that in Bava Metzia over there? One second. The answer to explain our Mishnah. Because the Gemara's problem over there is like this. Rav Huna is telling us that any time a Shomer claims the thing was lost or whatever in a way that I would be potter, but nevertheless I'm willing to pay for it, we still make him swear. Even in a case where he'd be chayev, whatever it is, he says, I'm willing to pay, I'm not willing to go through the whole rigmarole of Beisdin. Rav Huna says we still make him swear because Shema ain't of Nathan Ba, because he may have decided he wants to keep it for himself, so we make him swear that it's ain't of Birshusay. So the Gemara's question over there in Bava Metzia is, well, once he swore it's ain't of Birshusay, he's not going to be able to pull it out, because again, then he'd be contradicting himself. So why is our Mishnah concerned that Shema Yotzi Allah Tzadikadin, that the Malva might pull out Tzadikadin, if we make him swear, like Rav Huna is saying, that he's not in his Rishus, and he has no capability of pulling it out anymore? So the Gemara goes through a couple of different answers over there, but then Rav Ashi ends up answering like this. What it means is, the Kaimalon, which we explain over there with the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Rav Ashi says, what actually happens is Zen Nishva v'Zen Nishva. Both of them have to swear, both the Malva and the Loiva. The Malva has to swear that the thing is taka not in his possession. The loiva has to swear, whichever one has to swear about how much the mashkin was worth has to swear. Well, it depends. It could be the loiva in the earlier cases of our Mishnah, and it could be the malva in the later cases. So we have the second and the fourth cases of our Mishnah where shvura from motive mikdash is needed. In the second case of our Mishnah, it was the loiva. In the fourth case, it was the malva. So back in the second case of the Mishnah, therefore, so you have the loiver is having to swear as a motive mikdash because he says I only owe 1 dinar and the malva says you owe 2 dinarim. But the Malveh is still going to have to swear that it's not in his Rishus, like Ravona says. So Rav Ashi explains, there's Zenish Barashayna Barashusai, the Zenish Bakama Shabba. Each of them is going to have to swear. The Malveh is going to have to swear it's not in his Rishus. The Loiveh is going to have to swear how much it was worth. Then, Hachi Kama, so what our Mishnah means, not which one swears Bechlal, because both of them end up swearing. It means, Minishbat Chila. It means whose Shavua comes first. The answer is Mishap Pekadin Efter. The Malveh who has the Pekadin in his possession, Shema Yishav Azeva, Yotzi Allah, it's a Pekadin, because otherwise, if he makes the Loiva swear first, then the Malveh has not yet sworn it's not in his possession. He only claimed that it was lost. He could now pull it out of his pocket and contradict the Loiva and cause all those problems. So therefore, we make the Malveh swear first that it's not in his possession, and once he swears that, then we can safely have the Loiva swear that it was worth, three dinarim, and therefore that he owes only a dinar. Okay, so then that's, so according to that, that's what the Mishnah means.
Is that the halacha, by the way?
That is the halacha, yeah.
Much more logical.
So fine, that's what, that means.
They would have had, each one of them would have been murdered to something.
No, but that's, no, again, the fact that the Malveh, the fact that the Malveh, who was also a Shomer, is saying the thing was lost, that we're not considering that a Hodah as far as the dinim of Hodah and Mode of Mikdash or whatever. That's a different thing.
No.
That's a dinim of a Shomer.
But if the Malveh says, you know what, it was worth less than it was really worth, it was,
well, okay. Okay, no, fine. But okay, the point is, we're making him swear. That's not your shulta, and then therefore he's not going to take it out. Okay. New din. New din related to this. The question of a mashkin in general. Amashmul. The question of a mashkin and specifically of a lost mashkin. Amashmul. Taiman the Ozbek Alpha Guzi Lachabre. If a person lends 1,000 goods to somebody else, or Mishkin the Kapitan Magwa, and the loiva gave him as a mashkin, he gave him the handle of a sickle that he used for cutting weeds or whatever. So a handle was not really worth very much. But nevertheless, he used it as a mashkin. The oisfei alpha zuz lachaber. He lent 1,000 zuz, a huge amount of money to the other person. Well, mishkin like kapa the magli. He gave him as a mashkin the handle of a scythe. The hand which is worth what? Maybe $1 or two, whatever. Oven kapa the magla. Oven alpha zuz. If that handle gets lost. If that handle gets lost, then the 1,000 zuz is lost as well. So yeah, now we're gonna get into the Gemara soon. We're gonna get into some distinctions. Yeah, into some distinctions of it.
But
one second. Rashi says because Sava Vekibel, because the Malveh was willing to accept this handle as a mashkin. So therefore, that's it. Then he accepted that stands in for the loan, and therefore if he loses it, then the whole loan is gone. He has no basis to collect the no recourse. Yeah. Avol tauti katasi loy. But continues Shmuel. Let's say that he gave him two such handles as a mashkin. We're not going to say each handle represents 500 zuz of the thing. Nope. And therefore, if he lost one of them, then he should forfeit 500 zuz. Nope. We don't say that. It's all considered one mashkin. So therefore, as long as he has some of his mash, as long as he still has some of the mashkin, then the whole loan is still in effect.
The previous case was the loan was canceled.
The loan was canceled because it was only one. There was only one axe handle. Yeah.
And with two, it's not.
Rav Nachman says, "Afilu tauti katasi." Even with two of them, what we would say is "Aver chava chodach aver chamish mea." If one of them is lost, then 500 is gone. Because again, Rashi says we're talking about over here. If he didn't, even though he didn't specify, they didn't specify that one represents half the loan and the other represents the other half of the loan. Nevertheless, the Malveh was willing to accept it on that basis. Therefore, that's it. When one of them is lost, then half the loan is gone. And when the other one is lost, if the other one gets lost, then the whole loan is gone. Avo kata benaska loy. But continues Rav Nachman, if it was, he gave him as a mashkin a handle as well as a bar of silver or gold or what have you, then we would not say that because a bar of silver or gold or whatever is something that you could use to pay off the debt. Therefore, we don't consider that the naska represents half the debt and the handle represents the other half. We don't say that. Nahaudoi, Amri Afila Kata Vanaska, the Chum of Nahaudoi said, no, even if it was two different things like that, even if it was a handle and a bar of metal, of a naska, of a nfalga, nevertheless, we still say if the bar of metal is lost, then half the loan is gone. Avad kata, avad kula. And then if the handle is lost as well, then the whole loan is gone.
As far as the business of that kata vinaska, why Rav Nachman would make a distinction
about that. So again, Rashi is saying since naska, since a bar of silver or gold or whatever is something that could be used to pay it off, Rav Nachman figures then in that case we can't say that he was willing to accept it as representing half the loan. He means to obviously accept it for whatever it's worth that would go towards the repayment of the loan, but not necessarily half. If it was only worth a tenth of the loan, for example, then it would only represent one tenth of it. So Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that what we do is that we figure out how much is the naska worth relative to how much is the handle worth. So therefore, what we would say is that when Rav Nachman says that kata and naska is different, it means each one would only be in proportion to what one is worth relative to the other. The handle is worth a dollar. The handle is worth a dollar. The naska is worth $10. What it would mean, therefore, is if the naska was lost, therefore, it would mean 10/11 of the loan is gone. And if the kata is lost, it would mean that 1/11 of the loan is gone. That's how Tosfos learns.
Well, what difference does it make?
It makes a difference, because according to Rashi's explanation, it would mean that Rav Nachman would be saying, again, not the Nahadoi, but the Rav Nachman would be saying that the naska is not meant to represent necessarily a certain proportion of the debt. It represents, however, it's actually worth. If the naska is worth $10 and it's lost, we only deduct $10 from the loan. Whereas according to Tosfos, what we would say is because we have a naska which is worth $10 and a kata which is worth $1, and between the two of them we have $11 total that is meant to represent a $1,000 loan, then if the naska is lost, then 10/11 of the loan, 90% of the loan is gone.
Even though the total value of both
is far, well, because like Shmuel had said, if there was one kata, if there was one handle, which is only worth a dollar, nevertheless he accepted it and it represents the whole loan. Okay.
Because only if he says that.
Well, that's what we have to figure out. We have to figure out, are we talking about where they specified or not? That we're willing to accept this as the equivalent of a loan. Okay. So wait. Okay.
But let's not talk about if he says that I never lent you the money.
No. He's saying no. He's not denying anything. He agrees that I lent you, and he agrees I borrowed X amount from you, but you lost my kata, you lost my
handle,
which I gave you. No, but I don't want to give you another. I'm not obligated to give you another kata. I gave you a mashkin. The mashkin was meant to represent the loan. You lost my mashkin. You lost my handle. So therefore, that's it. I'm not obligated to repay you your loan. Okay, well, Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah and see if we can make that fit.
Contingent on the fact that they accepted...
Hold on. Tanan, let's see in our Mishnah. Sela ha-visichal of shekel ha-yashava. We have the first case, we have the second case of our Mishnah, where we said that the Malva says, I lent you a sela, and the Mashkin was worth a shekel, half of that, but and therefore you owe me the other half. Va'aloyim aloyki ala sela ha-visani ala shloshu dinin ha-yashava. And we said, the other one says, you lent me a sela, and the Mashkin was worth three dinin. And we said, he's chayev ha-shvura, four modim mitzvahs. Now, we're obviously not saying that the whole debt is forfeit. According to these various explanations, why not? According to Shmuel and according to Rav Nachman, it seems it should be, right? Why should it be chayav? Why shouldn't the loiva have the ability to say, look, you accepted this mashkin that was worth a shekel, which is half the debt. You accepted it as a mashkin on behalf of the whole debt. So once you lost it, then the whole debt is gone. Why are we arguing about whether I owe you one dinner or two dinners? The answer is masnissim, but the parish, shmur, but like parish. Because the difference is, the Mishnah is talking about where the malva specified and said, I'm not accepting it as representing the whole debt. I'm accepting it as it's worth a shekel. If I lose it, I owe you a shekel. And therefore, a shekel being less than a sela, you're still going to owe me X amount. And therefore, later on, they're arguing whether it's in fact worth a shekel or a shekel and a half. Shmuel is talking about the loy parish. Shmuel is talking about they didn't specify anything. When he didn't specify, we assume that the mashkin, unless otherwise specified, the mashkin is meant to actually represent
total
the debt,
value.
The total value of the debt. And therefore, if the mashkin is gone, so is the debt.
If they specify, then it's only accepted as value.
And if not, then yes.
But I think it's self understood that if a guy is not going to give a $50,000 thing for a handle, it's worth a dollar.
Well, so okay, one second. Tosfos has a discussion over here that Rabbeinu Chananel had a girsa the other way. Rabbeinu Chananel and Rabbeinu Tam had the girsa in the Gemara the other way around. Shmuel Shmuel is talking about Bidya Parish, where they explicitly specified at the time that the mashkin was given that this mashkin will represent the entire loan, and that if the mashkin is lost, then the loan is lost with it. So he actually accepted that explicitly on himself. The Mishnah would be talking about the other way around, where they didn't specify anything, and therefore, if it's not specified, then we would say he only accepted on himself the actual intrinsic value of it, which in the case of the Mishnah was a shekel or three dinarim, as the case may be. So therefore, in other words, according to Rashi, by default, we assume that the mashkin represents the entire loan, unless otherwise specified. According to Tosfos, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, and according to Tosfos, the other way around.
Right.
The halacha is like that second opinion. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch, like Tosfos, like Rabbeinu Chananel, the default is that the halva is not lost if the mashkin is lost. We figure out the value of the mashkin, that amount is subtracted from the debt, and the rest he still owes. If they specified at the time that I'm willing to accept on myself, then yes. And by the way, I mean, you have to ask the question, why would a person be willing to do that in the first place? Okay, Tosfos points one second. First of all, Tosfos points out in that case, then what's really the chiddush about it? And the answer is Tosfos says because you could have argued that even if he does explicitly accept, even if the Malva does explicitly accept such a thing, if I lose this axe handle, I'm willing to forfeit the whole thousand zuzim. You could argue maybe it's an asnachta. Maybe it's not a serious undertaking. Maybe you shouldn't hold him to it. That's the point, nevertheless. That's Shmuel's and Rav Nachman's and now Joey's point that nevertheless you do. So what would be the logic why a person might want to do that? So for the same reason as, for example, we learned in Bava Metzia that even though a Shemachinam usually is potter for almost everything, they could agree at the time when he takes the Shmira, when he becomes a Shemir, they could mutually agree, or he could agree on his own, whatever, that he's going to accept the responsibility of a Shemir Sachar, or even of a Shoyal, or whatever, and be Chayef of Neva, Aveda, Oinsin, or whatever. Again, why would he do that? One reason the Gemara talks about in some places, he might want to establish a name for himself as a very trustworthy person. You can rely on me, even that you give me an axe handle, I will be careful with it and I'm not going to lose it. And therefore, he takes on himself this responsibility in order to build himself a good name, in order to drum up business or whatever. And this way, people will be more willing to come and borrow from him.
Shall we try? As you wish. Okay. Borrowing money, he's not getting any rivers, so he's not looking for that money.
No, but first of all, I mean, you could still have, no, but like this, for example, it's true, he can't collect ribbis from it, but first of all, he could end up lending to Goyim, where he could collect ribbis from them. Second of all, he can show that he's responsible enough, and therefore people will make iskas with him, and an iska already he's entitled to profits from, as we learned about a heter iska in Bava Metzia. An iska where one person puts up the cash, and the other person runs the business, and the one who put up the cash is entitled to, the investor is entitled to a certain return on his money.
It's a double-edged sword, because it's something happens to
if something happens to the kata, then it's thousands of gone, of course. But he might be willing to do that in order to build up this reputation that you can trust him and that he's willing to put his money where his mouth is. Okay. And we'll continue tomorrow, Rabbi Hashem.